TV special.
Made with creamy butter.
And you know what that means? It's happening. I can feel it.
Yep.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Machine. That's the second track off of the underground classic from the late great DC band known as the Dismemberment Plan. That's from their 99 record, Emergency. And I welcome you to the B-side of episode 161 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show Media Monarchy. Coming in a little early for you to record live this B-side episode a little bit after 8 on this Friday morning, March 19th, 2010. And we're going to start off, appropriately enough, with an article titled simply, Can You Alter Your Memory? This is coming from the Wall Street Journal, and it's a lengthy article. I reposted it in its entirety. You just got to make sure you click the See Complete Post link on MediaMonarchy.com. Can you alter your memory? Is it possible to permanently change your memories? A group of scientists thinks so, and their new techniques for altering memories are raising possibilities of one day treating people who suffer from phobias, post-traumatic stress disorder, and other anxiety-related conditions. Some researchers are working with combat veterans, car accident survivors, and rape victims to replace their memories with less fear-filled ones using a familiar hypertension drug called propranolol. I'm sure it has some other fancier pronunciation. PROPRANOLOL. Other scientists are studying whether behavioral therapy can one day be used to modify memories of people who react with fear to common anxiety-producing events. A person bitten by a dog as a child, for example, might be able to overcome a canine phobia if the old memory can be replaced with a less scary one. The goal of the research isn't to erase memory outright, as depicted in popular movies over the years. That would raise ethical issues and questions of what would happen to associated memories, scientists say. Instead, quote, reducing or eliminating the fear accompanying the memory. That would be the ideal scenario, end quote, says Roger Pittman, psychiatry professor at Harvard Medical School, who's done extensive work in this area. The article, in its original form on the Wall Street Journal, does have photos from some of those aforementioned alluded to films. Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, Total Recall, even The Manchurian Candidate. And just as a side note, I did just recently rewatch most of Vanilla Sky, which I saw in the theater when it came out. Again, dealing and treading in the same areas. So I always find it fascinating to track the memes and see how things work and pop up. And it all fits together, my friends. A memory machine. So now what we're going to do is quickly go over some of the latest alternative media. The latest episode of The New World Next Week is up. Fake Russians, Geithner New, and Virtual Flags. All three of those stories we're going to go over in the flagship show. Episode 162 coming up right after this. Stay tuned. The New World Next Week is my weekly 10-minute YouTube video series with James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. 10 minutes, bite-sized, pertinent info, easy to understand, documented. So again, just as the taster, we go over fake report of Russian tanks sparks panic in the country of Georgia. The collapse of Lehman Brothers, what did Geithner know and when did he know it? And the third story, black cyber ops on the rise. And again, we're going to go over all those in episode 162. The latest podcast from James Corbett and CorbettReport.com, episode 121, Know Your Toxins, BPA, bisphenol A. While the corporate-controlled environmental movement is worrying about life-giving CO2, our modern environment is awash in gender-bending, endocrine-disrupting, sterility-inducing chemicals. This episode, Know Your Toxins, goes into one of those chemicals permeating our modern environment, BPA, bisphenol A, and you know we've gone over that quite a bit recently, and we've also tracked it on foodworldorder.com, which we're going to get to in just a little bit. Corbett Report also doing the Sunday update videos that are fantastic, another bite-sized 10-minute version of the news documented, bringing you what the corporate-controlled media will not. And even if they do kind of bring it to you, what we try and do is give you the story behind the story. We also have posted up a great interview James recently did with 9/11 whistleblower Sabelle Edmonds, speaking out on the whistleblower protections, and I believe we've made brief mention to the Lieberman bill weakening whistleblower protections. But FBI whistleblower Sabelle Edmonds joins Corbett Report to discuss the explosive information she uncovered while working in the FBI translation and how the safeguards that were supposed to be in place to help her blow the whistle were overseen by politicians who themselves had been corrupted. I know that sounds like a surprise. So that's all the latest from CorbettReport.com. And again, always a big hat tip to James. I am proud to be associated with him, doing the videos with him. And again, this is how this all works. We make connections with each other and try and learn and grow and share. My man Clyde Lewis, GroundZeroMedia.org. His show now live in the Portland metro area, kicking out 50,000 plus watts on KUFO 101.1 FM here in Portland, Oregon. KUFO.com. However, KUFO doesn't really need your support. ZeroPointRadio.com does and deserves your support. They simulcast Clyde Lewis Sunday nights live. And you can support Ground Zero and purchase those episodes for $1 a piece. I think I mentioned recently, if you just break that down to a pop song, 3 minutes that you buy off iTunes versus a 2-hour power-packed weekly show from Clyde Lewis. His latest episode, an article that I have posted up, Disclosure 33. Where Clyde writes, quote, "I think we're beginning to see some interesting activity." That is, if you put any stock in numerological magic. "It appears that something from space is coming at us and it's making a big noise. No government disclosure is going to have to tell you what you already know. I know it seems too good to be true, but it seems like something major is about to go down. If we desire it, it can only appear out of nowhere with no explanation. You will observe it and apply your own set of core beliefs to it. The faces of horror, the environmental collapse, the loss of life, and those we can pin the blame on, all evidence that our planet is slowly but surely starting to deteriorate. This is our new evolution, the refiner's fire that shapes us into becoming components of God ourselves. That is, if we choose to learn from the dark futures they're programming us to approximate. As above, so below." We also have some updates linked up with this. Huge comet and two asteroids hit the sun, and a CME, or a coronal mass ejection, think of it as a sun spire, was predicted to blast the Earth around the 16th and 17th. It now again being the 19th as I speak to you. And Clyde has been tracking this very much with some of his recent guests, like Freeman and Rex Church, the space war. So all that info is all linked up, and again, huge thanks to Clyde Lewis and GroundZeroMedia.org and ZeroPointRadio.com. And now, my friends, it's the long-awaited return of a video news show that you may recall. Longtime listeners know that I would always feature their videos, Collateral News. And I believe their website is still collateral.tv. But it's been several months since they put a video up, and their latest, reopening the anthrax case. And we're going to check this out in its entirety. This is very important. We have touched recently on the FBI closing the case, lone gunman. It was all that dead guy, Ivins. But Collateral News is back, and they're chomping at the bit, and as they write, just the brief synopsis that goes along with this video, it's been a while, but we're back. And this week, we look at the death of Bruce Ivins and the bullshit decision on the 2001 anthrax case.
As of this week, the FBI's investigation into the anthrax attacks of 2001 is officially closed. The verdict? Bruce Ivins, the Fort Detrick microbiologist who committed suicide in the summer of 2008, after months of FBI harassment, was the lone gunman. And yet, as the FBI surely knows, and as everyone who has been following the case closely knows, there is virtually no chance that Bruce Ivins acted alone if he was involved at all. But hey, Case closed anyway, folks. Welcome back to Collateral.
Think of a number between 1 and 10, but don't tell me.
Is it anthrax? It's been more than 8 years since the anthrax-laced letters were sent in the autumn of 2001. 7 letters in all, 5 mailed to corporate news agencies, and 2 to Democratic Senators Patrick Leahy and Tom Daschle. 22 people in all were infected, and in 5 cases, people died. In those 8 years, the FBI has never produced decisive evidence connecting anyone to the attacks. This despite the fact that the Amerithrax investigation, as it was dubbed, was the largest investigation in the Bureau's history, with more than 9,000 interviews conducted over 4 continents and over 6,000 subpoenas issued. Now, you may recall the FBI spent years pursuing its case against a man named Stephen Hatfield, named a so-called person of interest early in the investigation by then Attorney General John Ashcroft.
I have had nothing to do in any way, shape, or form with the mailing of these anthrax letters.
For his part, Hatfield always denied any involvement whatsoever and sued everyone he could for perceived violations of his constitutional rights. He ultimately won a $5.8 million settlement from the Justice Department in June of 2008 for its mishandling of the case. Now, there have been several other missteps, fuck-ups, and instances of blatant misconduct along the way, including the harassment of another scientist, Perry Nicosil, who began drinking heavily and eventually died of a heart attack in October 2002. But we pick up the story in July of 2008, less than a month after the Hatfield settlement was announced. A government bioweapons sector employee named Bruce Ivins committed suicide by what was ruled an overdose of Tylenol. No one found a suicide note, and no autopsy was performed. Soon after his death, the FBI broke the news to the public that Ivins had been their main suspect in the case. No public announcement of this had been made while he was alive, but in what can only be interpreted as an overtly threatening gesture. His lawyers have been told that he was about to be charged with the crimes and that the government would be seeking the death penalty. Now, why would you do that to a suspect known to be suffering from depression and other emotional disorders? Further, Ivins contended he'd been roughed up by the FBI after his therapist, a dubious character named Gene Dooley, consulted with the FBI without Ivins' knowledge and also went to a Maryland court asking for a restraining order against Ivins after he supposedly sent 3 threatening phone messages to him. You can listen to the phone messages for yourself and see if you think they qualify as threatening.
Hello, Gene. This is Bruce, and I want to thank you for getting me arrested and for Dietrich and roughed up, threatened with being handcuffed, guarded by two police officers with guns in the room, incarcerated. And also, I want to thank you for your destroying the client-patient relationship. So now the FBI can come and get all the information from you and from Dr. Levy, and you can't do anything about it because it's already been made available.
Dooley's affidavit for the restraining order is a curious document to say the least. It's complete with grammatical errors, misspellings of several words, including the word therapist, and also unsubstantiated claims that Ivins was homicidal or a sociopath. Her court testimony after Ivins' death included claims that he was a revenge killer, as well as other implausible things he supposedly done that would lead a reasonable observer to wonder why she hadn't done something much sooner than she did about this supposed menace to society. As for evidence that Ivins was any of the things that Gene Dooley claimed, just her word. A person with a long arrest record, a recent DUI conviction for which she was still on probation at the time, and therefore perhaps more easily influenced by law enforcement than someone who was not under their supervision would be. This part of the FBI's case stinks rotten, and yet there's an even bigger problem with the FBI's theory of the case. In claiming that Ivins acted alone, the Bureau is overlooking the results of a series of tests undertaken at the FBI's request in hopes of supporting its lone gunman hypothesis. The problem for the FBI's theory is simple. The anthrax used in the attacks was coated with silicon, allowing it to become a dangerous aerosol when it hits the air. But no one who worked with Ivins believes he had the skills to weaponize anthrax in this fashion. It required highly specialized equipment, for one thing, equipment Ivans had not been trained on, and equipment which did not even exist in the facility where Ivans worked. That has been confirmed by Ivan's supervisor at Fort Detrick, who was recently quoted in an article as stating, quote, "We did not have the capability to add silicon compounds to anthrax spores at their place of work." Faced with this pesky fact, the FBI concocted an alternative theory to account for the presence of the silicon. They surmised it could have perhaps been the result of contamination. But the concentration of silicon in the anthrax used was very high, about 1.4%. The FBI designated a California lab to test for the possibility of accidental absorption. But try as they might, and they tried 56 times, the scientists at the lab never came close to replicating the level of silicon concentration in the weaponized anthrax. The point being, the silicon present in the anthrax used in the attacks was put there on purpose by someone who knew what they were doing, and it's virtually inconceivable that that person could have been Bruce Ivan. The case has been closed anyway. Your tax dollars are worth. So, what I'd like to ask Tom Daschle is, do you still believe the FBI's theory? If so, why? Speak up, sir. The public needs to hear from you.
Further destroying another official story, this time in the case of the anthrax cover-up. That was the latest episode from Collateral News, reopening the anthrax investigation. But taking us even further into the present and into the possible future, we do have some updates posted below this, jumping to Washington's blog. In bizarre Soviet-style move, White House threatens to veto Intel budget unless FBI's anthrax frame-up is accepted. As Bloomberg writes, Obama probably would veto legislation authorizing the next budget for U.S. intelligence agencies if it calls for a new investigation into the 2001 anthrax attacks. A proposed probe by the intelligence agency's inspector general would undermine public confidence in an FBI probe of the attacks and unfairly cast doubts on its conclusion, Peter Orszag, director of the Office of Management and Budget, wrote in a letter to leaders of the House and Senate intelligence committees. Change. We've got more on Obama threatening to veto the bill, the budget bill, if it includes a new anthrax investigation. More on that from 911blogger.com. As well, from 911blogger.com, a quick video of representative from New Jersey, Rush Holt, who has all along been urging independent anthrax investigation. He's still on the record. He is still calling for a new investigation. We also have Bruce Ivan's attorney calling for the case to be reopened. That coming from BioPrepWatch.com. So as long as we're talking about botched investigations, our next story, by way of the Associated Press and the BBC, germs may blow the whistle on crooks one day. A forensic role for hand bacteria. Warning to criminals. Rubbing out your fingerprints may no longer be enough. Your germs could still give you away. It turns out the colonies of bacteria that live on people's hands are highly personal to each individual. That means forensic experts could one day use those bacteria to prove who had touched an object, researchers report in Tuesday's edition of Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, PNAS.org. Each one of us leaves a unique trail of bugs behind as we travel through our daily lives. While this project is still in its preliminary stages, we think the technique could eventually become a valuable new item in the toolbox of forensic scientists, lead author Noah Freer of the University of Colorado said in a statement. In addition to smudged fingerprints, the technique may also be useful in determining who has touched things like fabrics and highly textured materials. The new research was funded by the National Science Foundation, the National Institutes of Health, the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation of America, and that's right, the Howard Hughes Medical Institute. Now, of course, connections between Howard Hughes and icky germs aside, we've got a brief clip of that lead author, Fearer, of the University of Colorado, talking about how germs may blow the whistle on all of us one day.
So, your body is coated with bacteria inside and out. You're basically a walking microbial habitat. And we found that, you know, the diversity of bacteria just on the skin surfaces is really pretty incredible. You know, you harbor hundreds of different bacterial species just on your palm, for example. We've also found that everybody is pretty unique. So of those, let's say, hundreds or so bacterial species, very few of them are shared between individuals. So you have a very sort of specific bacterial community on your hand. So we designed a study, essentially a proof of concept, to see if we could take advantage of that phenomenon for forensic identification, to see if we could match an object to an individual that had touched that object by just looking at the types of bacteria left on the object. And we were surprised to find that it actually worked, and worked very well. The work involved a series of three different studies. One was to show that we could match the bacteria left on individual keys of a keyboard to the fingers of the owner of that keyboard. And then we showed that the bacteria stay on these surfaces for a fairly long period of time. They can last for up to 2 weeks under sort of standard room conditions. So we leave this trail of bacteria as we go about our daily lives, and that trail doesn't disappear immediately. It stays for a certain period of time. Well, there's still a lot of work we need to do to assess the validity of the technique and how well we can recover bacteria from surfaces and how well we can match objects to the person, to the individual who has that object. And this will require quite a bit of work. In particular, we need to see how well bacteria persist on a variety of different surfaces, whether we're talking about fabrics versus plastic versus metal surfaces, and what the accuracy is. We also need to assess how well the technique, if it'll work at all, with objects that are touched by multiple individuals. Because then you end up with this mixture of bacteria that may be left on the surface. But it's sort of proof of concept that it is possible to use bacteria for forensic identification, which is pretty neat.
Pretty neat. If you've ever seen the film Gattaca, you know that this is already the projected future history. Ethan Hawke's character constantly has to plant pieces of hair and fingernails from the person he's impersonating because his own traits would give him away, because it's much like a Brave New World tale. He's not supposed to be with the alphas. He is of a lower genetic class. A Brave New World, indeed. Our next post on MediaMonarchy.com, Climate Fix, Crackdown, and the Walmart Drug War, where we're going to go over just a few of the latest drug war, bio war updates. First, from the BBC, Climate Fix could poison sea life. Now, this ties into something we've discussed in recent months, and it's been the call, as many things have been. It all came in with the new Change-a-Luya administration, the whole new gaggle of eugenics freaks. Geoengineering the atmosphere. This is something that the folks of the Council on Foreign Relations and others are talking it up. John Ehrlich as well. Climate Fix could poison sea life. Again, this from the BBC. Fertilizing the oceans with iron to absorb carbon dioxide could increase concentrations of a chemical that can kill marine mammals, a study has found. Iron stimulates growth of marine algae that absorbs CO2 from the air and has been touted as a climate fix. Now researchers have shown that the algae increases production of a nerve poison that can kill mammals and birds. Writing in Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, PNAS.org, yet again, they say this raises serious concern over the idea. Geoengineering the atmosphere. And yet, our water and food is all poison. But again, all the folks who cause the problems are all going to pose as our saviors. And if we just give them more money and more of our liberties and more control, they'll save us next time. Times Online reports vitamin D better than vaccines at preventing flu, a new report claims. by way of fizorg.com, deforestation conference to turn plans into actions. Now, this, of course, on its surface is another one that, oh, this sounds good. We want to preserve old growth land. But it's just another land grab by our misleaders. It's the resource war. That's what we're seeing. UK families face fine for using wrong bin in household waste crackdown. Again, we've hit this story time and time again, both in the UK, coming to the North American Union in the not too distant future, the Green Police, ratting people out. Well, what did we see? The Green Police with Cheap Trick singing the song on the Audi commercial during the Super Bowl. It was sold as being, you know, funny and people being arrested for minor environmental infractions. But it's being normalized. It's being introduced. Snitches. The last note before we get on to the drug wars, which I suppose on Media Monarchy has pretty much come to mean the war against hemp and marijuana. But I'm getting ahead of myself. The last note on the bio wars, ex-Pfizer worker cites genetically engineered virus in lawsuit. This coming from the Hartford Courant. Medical experts will be watching closely Monday, now this being last Monday, so I don't have a new update on this story. When a scientist who says she has been intermittently paralyzed by a virus designed at the Pfizer laboratory where she worked opens a much-anticipated trial that could raise questions about safety practices in the dynamic field of genetic engineering. The labs make the viruses, just as we heard in the anthrax investigation piece from Collateral News. This could only have been done on purpose. The silicon was added to the anthrax at a place other than where Ivans worked, at Dietrich. The labs make the viruses. And then, you know, sometimes during a drill, they get out. And we've covered that, foot and mouth, porting down, Lyme disease, Plum Island. The stories are frightening. But a couple notes on the drug war. Walmart fires Michigan man with cancer for using medical marijuana. More on this story from allgov.com and even better from newsjunkiepost.com. Let's teach Walmart a lesson about medical marijuana. Our last note on the drug war comes from Raw Story. Wachovia pays $160 million to stop drugs probe. Wachovia, or Wachovia Bank, has agreed to pay U.S. prosecutors $160 million for its failure to stop drug money being laundered to Mexican affiliates, the DEA said Wednesday. The embattled bank admitted it failed to stop an estimated $110 million from being sent from the U.S. to Mexico by wire transfer that was used by cocaine-transporting aircraft. The Drug Enforcement Administration said Wachovia run foreign exchange houses in Mexico, or CDCs, Casas de Cambio, were involved in the illicit trades between 2004 and 2007. At least four aircraft bought with the cash were later seized along with large quantities of coke by unnamed foreign governments. The DEA said the bank had agreed to pay the fine to, quote, resolve charges that it willfully failed to establish an anti-money laundering program. Time and time again, we see the god, gold, oil, and drugs. The banksters, Wall Street, is a front. That's what they do. They run drugs, and more importantly, drug money. And that drug money is so huge because of the prohibition. They bring it in, and then you get locked up for using the drugs that they bring in. They cause the problem, then they'll pose as the savior. Time and time again, regardless of what kind of story, what kind of topic we're covering, the same memes and ideas emerge once you start to break it down. We're going to jump over to foodworldorder.com. and get a quick blast of headlines on the 318 Binge and Purge posted yesterday, March 18th, Pitchfork Seeds and Weed Killer, where we first note from ComradeSimba.com, Pitchfork event on the horizon. And at the bottom of this article, that's basically conversational, things that they've seen emerge. But at the bottom, the major questions of existence I've had are answered thus. One, it's all about the food. And two, the food issue will drive the zombies. Whatever those zombies may be. Bubba may be all ammoed and camoed up for the rape and pillage fest, but he's really only looking for a can of beans and a piece of pork fat when you get right down to it. People are scared of the dark forest and will stay as close to anything that constitutes civilization at all costs, even their lives. That goes double for the marauding types. Safeway and Ace Hardware are first in Maine, not some remote GPS coordinate. I see the deepest and most remote places as a redoubt and need to cast my lot with the edible plants and grubs lurking in the wild. The riders are approaching, and the wind begins to howl. An ominous note from Comrade Simba, Pitchfork event on the horizon. Pitchfork, of course, already being recently brought up in the world of media memes with the remake of The Crazies, the George Romero film, you know, where the government accidentally lets go a germ that turns people into marauding ghouls. And pitchforks figure prominently in the trailers and in the ad campaign. We reported to you a couple of weeks ago that initially there were some Muslims being eyed for poisoning the water at Camp Lejeune. Now we know from allgov.com, Camp Lejeune contaminated water investigation heats up. Congress and a federal anti-toxics office are continuing to investigate the controversy of contaminated water at the U.S. Marine Corps Camp Lejeune in North Carolina, where numerous military and civilian personnel have contracted various forms of cancer. McClatchy's been investigating the issue, reporting that Marine commanders withheld information from the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry about the presence of carcinogen benzene in an underground well at the military base. Lawmakers want to know why the Corps was not more forthcoming about the contamination, which lasted from the 50s to the 80s. So now I referenced that recent story about Muslims being eyed for contaminating the water at Camp Lejeune. I now see I maybe need to go back and try and follow that up and see if this was related at all to this benzene issue, which obviously has been going on for decades. Perhaps they were just looking to tie them into the homegrown errorism and say that these guys did it. Again from AllGov.com, rising seed prices pressure farmers and draw the attention of the Obama administration. From LocalNews8.com, legislature okays personal collection of rainwater in Utah. Now saying it's actually okay for you to collect rainwater. Micromanaging, again, the green police. If they don't live inside of your head yet, they're working on it. Illinois cities sue over atrazine in water. This is from Food Freedom, and you'll know that we've gone over atrazine, the weed killer, I believe, for the last several weeks now. It seems as though, or at least since I've been paying attention to the toxic world order, that every now and then, or every 6 months, a new name pops up that you'd never heard of before, and you suddenly discover it's poison, and it's in everything you eat and drink. BPA, atrazine, what the hell's in the water? Our last note from foodsafetynews.com, study finds arsenic in apple juice. So we ask, why does this happen? It just must be some colossal mistake, right? Our next piece on foodworldorder.com comes from News Junkie Post. Monsanto and Coca-Cola among top responsible corporations. the so-called Corporate Responsibility magazine, thecro.com, has released a list of the 100 most responsible corporations in the world with the PDF link for you to download this meg-and-a-half file. Some of the corporations that made it to the list are number 31, Monsanto, number 23, Nike, number 51, ExxonMobil, and number 8, Coca-Cola. The magazine has been listing mainstream corporations that are responsible every year. Interestingly enough, most of these corporations appear year after year. Ranking which corporations make it onto the list is decidedly by how responsible they are based on their environmental and human rights record, financial responsibility, and philanthropic giving. On the other hand, the environmental website EarthFirst.com published an article last year ranking the 7 most irresponsible corporations in the world, some of them, of course, in the CRO's list of most responsible corporations. So the worst from Earth First, number 1, Nestle, using cocoa harvested by slave labor. Pfizer, you know that company that we just mentioned a few minutes ago, perhaps creating a genetically engineered virus in their labs, and now is being sued by an ex-employee. They also experiment on Nigerian children. Walmart forces workers to work overtime for zero. ExxonMobil sabotaging efforts to deal with climate change. Chevron ignoring toxic pollution in the U.S. and elsewhere. Dow Chemical refusing to clean up toxic sites. Monsanto herbicides. GM seeds. Now, Corporate Responsibility magazine didn't include Halliburton or Z or Blackwater. Maybe that'd been too obvious. Sadly enough, many of the corporations listed tend to sponsor programs on PBS. NPR's Marketplace has also received support from Monsanto. Indeed, these corporations are working hard at changing their image and perhaps even history by trying to appear responsible on the surface. Environmental and human rights activists, however, continue to fight to stop the damage these corporations are causing, and informed citizens are not likely to take the CRO's list too seriously. They also link up from StopCorporateAbuse.org, Corporate Hall of Shame. So it's interesting, this article from News Junkie Post, which does have good stories, they seem really dismayed by discovering that foundation-funded fake progressive media like PBS and NPR are actually funded and prodded and poked by the foundations that bring us and that have been brought to us by all the same families that we talk about, the eugenics freaks. They love the Rockefellers, love Margaret Sanger, love the Huxleys, the Wedgwoods, the eugenicists. So hopefully whoever wrote this piece for NewsJunkiePost.com will take more stock in looking into the foundation-funded media. But the last thing I want to note on here is, instead of linking up a bunch of Earth First stuff or the CRO.com stuff, we want to draw attention to a site called nomore.org. That's K-N-O-W-M-O-R-E. No more, as in to know, to learn. Nomore.org. Question your goods and vote with your wallet. Their website is a sort of wiki-style page where you can go, type in the name of a corporation or organization, and it'll give you the stats and their rundown. Dealing with environmental, human rights records, financial responsibility, and so on. Our final story on foodworldorder.com, and for this B-side episode 161... from MediaMonarchy.com, mystery substance found in the Chinese fluoride that is added to the Massachusetts water. Did you get that? This story comes to us from WCVB-TV, in the BostonChannel.com, and we have the clip for you. But interestingly enough, the whole thing about this, this investigative story on this bizarre mystery substance found in the Chinese fluoride that's being added to the Massachusetts water, distracts from the fact that fluoride is a deadly killer.
The water in Amesbury is supposed to have fluoride in it, but Rob Damaris has been concerned for years about what's in the supply he gets from China. The residue you see here is what won't dissolve when he puts the fluoride powder in the water.
What is that?
We don't know.
You have no idea what's in there?
I don't know what it is. It's not soluble. And it doesn't appear to be sodium fluoride, so we're not quite sure what it is.
Damaris says the residue clogs his machines and makes it difficult to get a consistent mix.
For almost a year, these fluoride pumps in Amesbury have been off, and the water department says they'll stay off until they can figure out what's in the fluoride.
The Department of Public Health says more than 650,000 customers in 44 communities are getting the product in question, and only Amesbury has temporarily stopped using it.
But despite those concerns, we want to be clear. Both state and federal health officials tell Team 5 Investigates Chinese fluoride is safe.
The New York company which supplies the fluoride in question says it is certified by the National Sanitation Foundation, which assures the quality of the product. And despite 1,000 complaints, the Centers for Disease Control also says it's safe, although testing continues to determine the precise composition of the residue.
They should test it to make sure that what they're putting in is safe for us to drink.
Paul Stewart lives in Newburyport and believes he has a right to know exactly what's in his water.
On the same day that I read the story about the fluoride coming from China, I also read stories about the melamine that was being contaminated in milk products coming from China, that, you know, Abercrombie & Fitch actually pulled some of their jewelry off the shelves because it was contaminated with cadmium coming from China. And then we had another story about more lead in kids' toys coming from China.
Since 2007, most of the sodium fluoride has also been imported from China because it's the least expensive on the market.
I don't think that when it comes to something that I ingest every day, the lowest bidder is good enough. I'd like to be able to add it in, you know, worry-free.
Mystery substance found in Chinese fluoride that's added to Massachusetts water. I have a ton of supplemental contextual links for you, other YouTube clips, links to flashbacks about melamine on foodworldorder.com, more on the Amesbury Water Department, water fluoridation, just a breakdown from Wikipedia. Links for you to find out if your town's water is fluoridated. And interestingly enough, a piece from a New Zealand dentist written back in 97 called Why I Changed My Mind About Water Fluoridation. That's going to do it for this B-side episode 161 from MediaMonarchy.com, recording live on the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. And the way we're going to go out is to note that Alex Chilton, he was the lead singer of a band called The Box Tops, which you may know from their 67 song, The Letter. Give me a ticket for an airplane. Ain't got time to take a fast train. Lonely days are gone. I'm going home. My baby, she wrote me a letter. That one. He was 16 when he sang that. He was also the leader of a band called Big Star. And I've probably played a couple tracks from them in the Media Monarchy past. You can't be a power pop fan and not know the influence of Big Star. Alex Chilton dies at age 59 of an apparent heart attack in New Orleans. South by Southwest is going on right now, and of course there's going to be impromptu tributes to Alex Chilton. And again, I go over this because I'm a student of pop culture. I have a degree in it. And you know, I was the music director at my radio station, college radio station, community radio back east, 89.7. And the way we want to go out is if we jump down in this LA Times article, they'll note that critically, Alex Chilton and Big Star are huge, I know when I did mention them to someone at work the other day, because we heard September Girls play on the store radio. Older guy, never heard him before. He should have been primed to know exactly who they were, but unfortunately he didn't. In fact, Alex Chilton was immortalized in a song named after him by The Replacements, the Minneapolis band from the 80s and 90s that was one of countless big star descendants. Children by the million sing for Alex Chilton when he comes around. The Replacements lead singer and songwriter Paul Westerberg sang, imagining how much better the world might have been had those millions actually heard Alex Chilton's music. So that's how we're going to go out with The Replacements, Alex Chilton. Stay tuned for episode 162 from MediaMonarchy.com. My name is James Evan Pilato, your host, your webmaster, your DJ. Saying take care.
Combining music and stylized images.
It's all remote control.
Each one of those images was electronically based.
And that concludes our program for tonight.
This could really catch on.
I can't remember when I've been so moved.